I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Syrupcast, Mobile Syrup's Canadian tech-focused podcast. I'm Patrick O'Rourke, and Brad Bennett, a man who continues to refer to himself as the bad boy of tech, and actually recently mentioned that that is who he is on Twitter, is once again across the internet from me. He looks like he joins maybe like a biker gang or something.
Yeah, I decided to go full bad boy this week. Ever since I wanted to get that skull chain for my Apple Watch that I couldn't get, I've just been like, I need to embody this to tell people that they need to make me the skull chain. So I figured this week I'd just start the podcast off with a sight gag, you know, try to bring people into the podcast from the audio version. Yeah, it's a sight gag. So hopefully people will switch from audio to video. Check us out on YouTube.
It's definitely worth it just to see you in a... Is it a leather jacket?
Yeah, this is my girlfriend's leather jacket. You can see it's perfectly sized. Fits well.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Thank you.
Just incredible. It's beautiful.
This week we have John Lamont once again on the podcast with us. How are you doing, John?
Doing pretty good. I'm back. It's gray outside. My favorite color.
It is absolutely disgusting.
When it was white out because of all the snow.
Yeah, that's
did
true.
It snow?
Yeah,
snow when we were doing the last spot.
The snowing podcast. Yeah.
Interesting.
Upgrade. Weather upgrade.
Slightly. Yeah.
I'm sure my backyard is a literal swamp right now. I'm not looking forward to looking at that.
Yeah, I guess I'll just mention it because I mentioned it almost every podcast, but the grass I've been growing in my backyard, it's here, it's there, it's a lawn now, and I'm excited.
That's exciting. We should embed a photo of your grass in the podcast.
Yeah, honestly, if I have a before and after picture, I'll put one up when I edit it.
It is impressive. I've seen it.
Nice.
So once again, this isn't a gardening podcast, unfortunately, as much as I would love that to be the case. This week, we're talking about two particular devices and two stories that recently hit the site. My hands-on sort of review with Apple's AirTags, and then John's hands-on with the Galaxy Book Pro, Samsung's latest laptop. But as always, before we get to that, Bennett, please hit us with the hottest news of the week.
News-wise, I don't know. There hasn't been too much happening outside of the Bill C-10 stuff and the Epic versus Apple stuff. But just before that, in terms of what we've got on the site, we've got some couple of cool features. We've got one about porting your number over. So if you want to change plans, we kind of like walk you through that and give you some links on, you know, how to check out the carrier's FAQs and figure all that stuff out. And then also Brad Shankar, our premier video game reporter, I guess. Has written a pretty stellar interview with Tim Schafer, like legendary game designer, about Psychonauts 2 and how the game is like trying to tackle mental health issues. It's honestly a great read. Definitely just like if you're looking for something to read, it's definitely worth checking out. Back into the news. So I think we'll start with Epic versus Apple because I think that's something that we're all the most familiar with. If you haven't heard, a while ago, Epic Games and Apple got into a lawsuit. Basically, Epic was like, we are tired of paying 30% cuts to app stores, you know? So if Fortnite is in the App Store or Steam or wherever, a lot of these just app stores and game stores online, they generally have to give a 30% cut of every game sale and all of the in-app transactions. So they don't like that. They want to pay less. And Epic has kind of put their money where their mouth is and is spending millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars to fight Apple to try and change that. Pat, I know you were reporting on it. Do you want to talk a little more?
Yeah, I haven't really reported on like the core stuff behind it, but there's like a lot of interesting information that came out of just the beginning of the hearing yesterday. So one of the stories that I wrote, for example, in order for crossplay with Fortnite to work on PlayStation, Fortnite and Epic in turn actually give Sony a cut of in-app purchases that are made on other platforms. There's like a whole document that was revealed. So that was like an interesting thing that came out because that's a bit of a sweetheart deal with Sony. That was one of them. And then the other thing that came out too, just because like these hearings are so massive and they're pretty boring. Like I listened to it for a solid 2 hours yesterday, and it's like very simple things like defining what Fortnite is, defining what a battle royale is. It's stuff that we know, right? But that like the people that are part of those hearings don't understand, right? So then the other thing that came out was like how much Epic paid for those free games it gives away in the Epic store, Epic Game Store. And like, surprise, surprise, they give big publishers way more money than they give independent developers. There's some games in that list that were like shockingly low. Like there was the remake of Metro 2033.
Redux.
It was $0, which was a little surprising. And then there's stuff like Fez. They only got 75,000. There's like, it's just interesting. It's like, it's almost like seeing like how the pizza is made in a way. Mm-hmm. It's like stuff that we've never seen before. And I think that you're going to keep seeing that as this hearing goes on.
Yeah, all the news that broke, I think it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, about how Eddie Q wanted to bring iMessage to Android
that
back in 2013. That came out of these hearings too. So yeah, like the curtain is getting pulled back on a lot of these things, and these interesting stories are really interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
On the game thing with them giving away the games, I saw, I think the figure was $11 million worth of, or they spent about $11 million on games, and they got like 3 million more users on their store. So it worked out to something like $2.37 spent per new user, which is like a pretty low amount of money, realistically.
It's like nothing
to spend to get people to use their store.
Exactly.
Because the Epic Game Store has a 12% commission for anything sold on their platform. So any of these new users, all they had to do was buy at least one $20 game, and Epic would have made their money back. And most games are a fair bit more than that.
Yeah.
So just an insane, like when you do the math on it, it's insane how little they had to spend to get people on the store. And that was only for like the last like couple of years or something like that. Like that wasn't even the full list of games. Mm-hmm.
I think once the hearing's like a little more underway, we'll probably do an episode focused specifically on that, because I have some hot takes about stuff. But
cool.
I won't get into any of that now. It's just like a fascinating like peek behind the curtain at how the video game industry and app stores operate. And it's like almost like we may see this again, but this is like the first time we've ever seen this much information revealed about behind the scenes deals and stuff like that.
Especially with Apple, which is like a company that's been historically very silent on the behind the scenes of pretty much everything that they do. Definitely really interesting. And I guess really the only one other thing I wanted to say about the Epic v. Apple thing is, you know, a lot of people are talking about the 30% cut, but I don't think that's really the focus. I think the main kind of focus of this whole thing is whether or not Apple's App Store is a monopoly, because the 30% cut doesn't matter if you have six stores that are competing, because that's going to drive down that 30% cut, right?
Because
if you look at like the PC gaming app marketplace, there's Steam, there's Epic Game Store, you know, there's a whole bunch of other stores, EA's store, the Xbox app, right? There's all these different places where you can buy games. And some of them, most of them were just offering a 30% cut, but Epic is now at 12%. Microsoft is lowering their cut for PC games on Windows. So there's all these different like things that are changing in that sphere. So, you know, I think really it just comes down to whether or not the App Store could be considered a monopoly. And if it is, what's going to change in regards of letting more stores on?
There's other interesting stuff too that Tim Sweeney, Epic CEO, talked about during the hearing. And it was like, there's a big focus, at least with his statements, on the amount of control that Apple has over the App Store, just in terms of like refunds, customer service. Like it's all controlled by Apple. So that was like more, I don't think I had heard that angle of the argument against the App Store's monopoly before. So that was also interesting to hear more details about.
One of the things I saw yesterday just about the PC space was apparently like if your game is listed on Steam, you can't lower the cost of it anywhere else unless you also lower the cost of it on Steam.
Oh, really?
Steam is kind of like the tide that keeps all game prices the same. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah,
there's like, I mean, as this antitrust stuff happens with like Epic v. Apple, it's also kind of happening trickle down all over the sort of industry. And yeah, it's like really shaking things up. I don't know if it'll change because I don't think consumers care, but I hope so. I hope it changes.
Well, that was part of like Epic trying to weaponize its, I don't know, weaponize is a harsh word, but like trying to.
No, it's perfect.
Inspire its fan base to like rise up against better, Apple, yeah. With those ads and stuff that were funny, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that was a very smart move by Epic to try to get the average Fortnite player to care about something that in the grand scheme of things probably won't really affect them very much.
Yeah.
I think that Steam tidbit is also very interesting, that there's like the mandatory fee changes. Like if you're going to lower your fee or your game price on another platform, you have to lower it on Steam too. It doesn't surprise me. I didn't know that was a thing, but it doesn't surprise me. I feel like Amazon used to do something similar or has been accused of doing similar things to try and like basically stop businesses from undercutting the cost on that platform, right? Because if that rule wasn't there, you could have, you'd see a company go, okay, you can buy our game on Steam for $70, or if you go buy it on the Epic store, it'll be cheaper because Epic's taking less of a cut from us, so we're going to lower our price.
Yeah, we are Epic, so we'll just sell our game cheaper on our store because we just want to bring people in the door. But
yeah, well, Epic's a little bit different because I don't think any of their games are available outside of their store, at least on PC, right?
Oh, yeah, probably not. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Fortnite power. Anyway, we should probably move on because we don't have too much time today.
Yeah, we're on a tight deadline today as we talk about Epic for 20 minutes and it's not even a real podcast topic.
It's a big thing.
No, it is 100%. Yeah.
I think it's worth talking about. The next thing is this Bill C-10, which is kind of happening. The Liberals announced, I believe it was today, that they're kind of tweaking it to sort of mean that like, hey, we're not trying to censor social media posts from people. We're just trying to get like big companies that are not paying into the broadcast fund, which essentially helps fund like Canadian content and the CRTC and things like that. They're trying to like back away from some of the wording they were using, which is probably for the best. If you've been following Bill C-10, it basically is like, hey, Netflix doesn't pay into the media fund because it's an online broadcaster, not a traditional broadcaster. I'm not even sure if it's defined as a broadcaster, but they're basically trying to define places like Netflix and other online big media powerhouses as broadcasters, so they then have to pay into the Canadian Media Fund to basically fund the CRTC and Canadian content and other kind of stuff like that. So we'll see how that shakes out, but it's...
I think the wording of C-10 has drawn a lot of criticism because from like free speech advocates and stuff like that, just because it seems like it could be a very easy gateway into regulating social media posts and user-generated content and stuff like that, which is definitely a concern. But I think one of the aspects that's getting lost in a lot of the conversation around Bill C-10 right now is that it's not exactly the most effective way to get Canadian content funding from, you know, companies like Netflix that aren't necessarily paying into the broadband fund, because Bill C-10 doesn't really do anything to change the CanCon rules or anything like that already exists. It's just kind of a weird workaround to make these companies pay into a fund that it will effectively mean that funding goes to big broadcasters in Canada, like, you know, Bell and Rogers. So it's not really the most effective way to actually help Canadian creators. It just kind of is a new way to siphon money from outside broadcasters and give it to Canadian broadcasters.
Yeah, I think when I've been reading about it, the biggest like worry that comes to my mind is not like, oh no, the CRTC is going to be stifling my tweets, because I'm pretty sure they don't care about my tweets or even want to be monitoring all Canadians' tweets and stifling them. But it's more like, will these big companies just like raise prices for Canadians if they have to pay more, or will they like just stop doing things in Canada because they now have to pay more to do things here? And that's more what worries me rather than like the government coming after my tweets. So we'll see what happens. But yeah. The last thing I have in the hot news is Tim Hortons revamping their drive-through signs. They've already done a bunch of them. You may have already seen them, but they're using like Samsung TVs basically turned sideways as their signs. They said they're vandalism proof, which remains to be seen, I don't believe. And also that they're much better to look at. But I'm also pretty sure I've seen these signs because I know that there are some already like embedded. And I'm pretty sure the off-angle viewing is just atrocious. And I remember hating that, but I could be wrong. So
these are the signs that show like the menu, correct?
Yeah, the menu signs in the drive-thru specifically.
Pretty sure the one like near my house that I still go to sometimes has that, I think.
Do you know if the off-angle viewing is really bad?
It's impossible. I can't see the menu at all. if it is that TV, like, I don't know for sure. It just looks brand new, like it was recently installed.
Yeah, then that would be the Samsung ones probably. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen them too. And it's just like, the way TVs work is they sort of stack pixels in one way or the other. And if you just turn it sideways without stacking the pixels, and they also stacking the pixels then sideways, the viewing angles become very shallow. Like, I have a monitor, a regular like monitor in a rectangle. This like a, as people have monitors, and then I have one in portrait mode beside. And the one in portrait mode, it's like, it works if I look on it. And then if I step over here, the viewing angles get a lot worse because of the way that the pixels are set up. And it's just kind of annoying and something that I wish they would have thought of. But, you know,
my TV's like that too.
Yeah. Brighter screens. And yeah, that's about it for hot news, unless anyone else has anything.
No, let's talk about the AirTag.
Let's go into AirTag mode then. Yeah.
I'm waiting to receive all of the new Apple products. The only one that I've gotten my hands on so far is the AirTag. First, it's incredibly weird for me to call it AirTag and not AirTags after writing leaks about it for like 2 years, calling it the AirTags. That's very strange. So it's interesting. It's like it's a small device. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter that much to Apple's ecosystem. But it was probably one of the devices that I have been looking forward to the most, just because I've been writing about it for like 3 years at this point. It was basically revealed in a Apple support video like 2 years ago. It's rumored to have been ready forever, and they've just been waiting for the right time to push it out. So it was exciting to finally actually get my hands on it. And generally, like, as long as you are an Apple user, like you use the iPhone, even if you're just an iPhone user and you use like PC or whatever, it is probably the best tracker that I've encountered, as long as you use the iPhone, because obviously it's locked to Apple's devices. There's some stuff with NFC that you can do with an Android device that we'll talk about later. But generally speaking, like, the build quality is great, feels awesome. It looks cool. I would say that the stainless steel back is going to get absolutely scratched to hell very, very quickly. And it's going to look pretty junky. At some point, it's already starting to look like that. I have one on like a keychain with my car keys.
Just a beautiful metal patina.
Yeah. That's like a good way to put it, a patina for sure. I'm looking forward to writing my own story about how to give your AirTag the perfect patina.
Yeah. Scratch it up with some sandpaper.
And then there's like the ultra wideband stuff, right? Which gives it a unique feature that competitors like Tile and Chipolo and stuff like that don't yet have. I know that the Tile is working on something with ultra wideband. It could be just as good as what Apple has, but right now that really gives the AirTag an advantage. It just makes it way easier to find stuff, like through a combination of different sensors in the phone. It literally gives you an arrow pointing to where your AirTag is located. Like, we can't really go anywhere right now, so I haven't tested out the Find My network. Generally speaking, my experience over the last 2 weeks with using the AirTag and just like playing around and experimenting with it has been pretty flawless.
I saw a video about a Dutch YouTuber who like sent one in the mail and just like tracked it as it went through the mail with the Find My network, and it worked well.
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, a little like sketch, because you're just like, I don't know. I guess it's not really that sketch, but it just seemed kind of weird. But yeah, it worked. So Find My network seems pretty good, as we imagined it would be.
Like, you would assume it is, because there's millions of iPhones out there. There's millions of Macs. There's millions of Apple devices. Obviously, that's in North America, right? Like, in other regions of the world, the iPhone is not the most popular. Like, in Canada, to my understanding, it's like a 50-50 split. In the US, it's a little less than 50-50. But, like, somewhere like India, right? Like, the iPhone isn't extremely popular there. Android's the dominant operating system. Obviously, the Find My network might not be quite as strong.
Yeah.
That's something to keep in mind as well.
Yeah. But then again, like, who knows if the Tile networks are as strong there either. You know what I mean? So
could be. I don't know.
Yeah. But no, the AirTags are super cool. I was going to ask, so did you get a couple of the Apple cases with yours? How do they hold up? How do they seem?
So I didn't get them when I did the initial hands-on, but they did come, I think, a day later or something like that, which sucked. They feel high quality. They're like what you would expect from Apple. AirTag just slots in them. I have one of the longer keychains and then one of the smaller ones. I think blue and red. The one thing I kind of wish is that there was like a piece of transparent, I don't know, material on the back, just to prevent the stainless steel side from getting scratched to pieces. Like, if you're putting it in your pocket with keys, like we already talked about this, it's going to look ridiculous. And I get that it's just a tracking device, so it really doesn't matter. But it just seems like that would have been like a forward thinking thing on Apple's part. But it's they're also crazy expensive. Like, I think they're more than the AirTag itself.
Yeah, I think so.
How long before you think some accessory maker puts out essentially a screen protector type thing, but for the back of the AirTag?
I'm honestly disappointed in myself that I haven't looked for one yet, because I'm like the screen protector king and the case king here. Like, I should have looked on Amazon. I think, I don't know if I've talked about it on the podcast once, I thought about getting ear covers for the AirPods.
I think you sent those pictures of those.
Just because I'm like terrified of like them falling off my head or something when I'm walking around my house or something, which is entirely like, it's stupid. Like, it's not going to happen. I don't need to worry about it. But I remember looking on Amazon and like, there's cases for that. Like, there's clear silicone cases and like little cases with like bunny ears on them and stuff. So I'm like, sure someone's going to come out with like something for the AirTags.
Yeah, probably. There's so much Apple accessories, except for that Apple Watch skull chain I was talking about before. They only make that for the small Apple Watch, and very upset, but that's another day.
I was looking for a 400-word story about that one.
Man, I literally was looking up all kinds of like Apple Watch necklace chains you could hang an Apple Watch from, but there's no, like, they're all just like super weird. Like, skull one, which was just like weird in a fun way. But this question kind of can go to both you guys. I don't even know if you saw this last week, Pat, but people have been like drilling holes through the top of the AirTags. Oh, I didn't see that. Because they're like, screw Apple, I'm not buying a case that's more expensive than my AirTag. I'll just drill a hole and put a keychain on it myself. And it works, because there's like a tiny bit of plastic that you can go through near the edge with a really small drill bit. What do you guys think about that?
That's like a huge design shortcoming, right? Like, it's strange that they don't have that. Tile has that. That was one of the things I noted in my hands-on in terms of the design. Like, it looks sick, but just put a little hole in it. Just put the little hole. So like, it's cool to hear people coming up with their own solutions.
Yeah, definitely a bummer that they did not do that. It's a little bit tricky to do. I saw the story, and basically they watched some guy watched a teardown of the AirTag on YouTube and thought, oh, it looks like there's a little bit of a gap, and tried drilling it and was like, yeah, it works. I would imagine it voids the water resistance and probably also your warranty. So maybe not the best thing to do, but also if you really want to save that money, you know, I guess go for it. I'm really surprised that Apple did not put in some sort of thing, but also it's easy money if there isn't one and you have to buy an accessory. So
I would suggest people like look on Amazon. Like, I'm going to Google live on the Amazon search live on the podcast cool right now. There's got to be tons, right?
There's this one, the coolest one I saw. We should actually just all talk. If you've looked at them, we should all talk about the coolest ones we've seen. But the coolest one I saw, it looks like a little pouch almost. So you put it in and then it's sticky on one side. So you just it becomes flat, and then you could like stick it to like underneath your bike seat, or like stick it to the back of an iPad. Although that would be not make sense.
Like the Tile
also have
Tile has one that's sticky on the back, right? I can't remember what the name of it is. It's very similar to that. It's
the Spot, maybe Tile Spot.
I'll check that as well.
But yeah, there's a sticky one. I thought that was really smart. That's the coolest one I've seen.
I saw a tweet of somebody who just duct taped their AirTag to the back of a Siri remote.
Yeah, I saw that too. They should.
It's called the Tile sticker.
That makes sense. They honestly should put U1 into their Apple TV remotes. Like, that would be so smart. Because
that would
like,
be smart. Yeah.
Where's the remote?
I think Pat, you wrote a story about the AirPods Max not having it.
Yep. Which is very disappointing.
It's for something that expensive. For Apple, which is the company that's like, oh, everything just works. Like, that's what they're known for. It blows my mind that they have not incorporated their tracking technology into basically all of their small and easy to lose products, like the remote and the AirPods and the AirPods Max.
Yeah, the stuff that they're putting the U1 in some ways, it like doesn't entirely make sense. Like, it's in the Apple Watch Series 6, it's in the iPhone 12 series, and I believe it's also in the iPhone 11 series. To me, it makes sense. You just throw that thing in everything, right? Like, what does that hurt? How much would it actually cost you? Probably a ton of money, but like, you're already paying so much for these Apple devices, you'd expect them to have the best that their technology is capable of offering.
And on top of that, like, it's a great platform lock-in feature, right? And we all know Apple's all about that platform lock-in with iMessage, right? So
the ecosystem.
If all of your Apple products could help you locate all of your other Apple products, like, that's a huge lock-in feature that build on that Apple brand.
And then in terms of cases, like, I just did a very, very quick search on Amazon. Like, the first one that comes up is $14. So like, if you really want a case for one, don't buy the Apple one, which is usually the rule of thumb with stuff, unless you need the official Apple product for whatever reason, just get whatever third-party accessories available, because it's generally going to be almost as good as what Apple has available.
There was a Nomad one too that's like a sunglasses strap that like comes out the back of your sunglasses and then has like a, like where some sunglasses strap have the little like tie thing so you can tighten them on the back of your head. It's like that, but it's big and you can put an air tag in it. So if you lose your sunglasses, you can find them.
I'm going to ask Nomad to send me that.
Yeah, honestly, it's pretty sweet. But yeah, I guess just going off what John said about the waterproofing, CNET did like a really cool story. I sent it to you guys before this, but basically they put like an air tag through a washing machine and then they also put one in an ice cube tray and froze it. And it did survive both of those.
Nice.
Although the person that did that story was like, hey, if you do get it like really wet or freeze it somehow, it's probably best to like take it off and wipe out the battery compartment, because they did notice some water starting
water
to
get inside a little bit.
But cool to know that they can go through the wash like AirPods.
Yeah, AirPods, I've put them through the wash several times by accident. Not the case, just the AirPods themselves. And they were fine every time, which I was shocked about. I was sure that I had destroyed them. Yeah. And that's both the standard AirPods and the AirPods Pro. So it's cool to see that that was an emphasis with the AirTags too.
Yeah, and even when they said they had it in the freezer, like they would kept opening the freezer door before it had completely frozen solid and it was getting very cold, very cold, very cold, and they were still able to ping it, which is like good if you leave it outside in Canadian winter. Although for how many days it will last in a sub-zero, like minus 20 temperatures, that still remains to be seen, but it's nice to know that you have a chance.
That would be a fun test. Just throw it in my backyard in the winter and see what happens.
How long it lasts.
Just check every morning, like try to find it every morning.
Yeah, under the snow. Also, I know you said you lost an AirTag in your house. Did you ever find it?
So I got, Apple sent me four. I set up two of them. I put one on my car keys, one on my house keys, and then I had a third one that I was just using for taking pictures and stuff. Yeah. And I was convinced that my cat had like crawled up on the table and like batted it and like knocked it in a vent or like under a table or something. And I was like scolding.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
My cat, like asking her where it was, and she was looking at me like, I don't speak English, I'm a cat, I don't know what you're talking about.
And also, I didn't do it, you narc.
Yeah, exactly. And then I thought, like, okay, where might it be if she didn't mess around with it? Because if she hit it, it would be like in my office somewhere, and it 100% wasn't in my office. And I hadn't connected it to my phone, so I couldn't actually look for it that way, which would have been made a much better story. And then, yeah, I checked my, I have like the iRobot i7 Plus vacuum that has it drives to a dock and then like empties its whatever it's vacuumed out of the vacuum itself. I found it inside that vacuum. I thought that maybe it was like inside the dock, and it wasn't. It had just got caught inside the vacuum itself.
I'm actually surprised that vacuum can suck up something as big as an AirTag. That pretty good recommendation on the vacuum sliding in here. Wow.
Those two vacuums, the i7 Plus and I think the other one's called, it's the 9 something, like the S9 or something like that.
Is it i9 too? I think
I don't think it's i9.
Yeah, no, there's like an S series.
Yeah, that's like their highest end one. They're expensive. This isn't a vacuum podcast. We have other things to talk about that are more important, but they're expensive, but they're shockingly good. Like they actually will clean your house. They actually suck a ton of dirt up, and they navigate things pretty well.
Yeah, the more I've been like growing up into a man, someday I'll be the bad man of the internet, but not yet. But the more I get there, I'm realizing like the more money you invest in a vacuum, it's pretty clutch. Like I got a nice like standing one that like mounts on the wall, like a Dyson whatever.
Yeah, I got one of those too.
And it's so much better than my like $200 vacuum that I bought just off the shelf at Walmart a few years ago. It blows it away.
I have a Dyson outsized, and like that thing's a grand, I think, but I would argue that it's worth it. Like it's so nice not have to plug in something, and it sucks up so much more than like a $200 vacuum from Walmart or whatever.
Yeah, I would just be going over the carpet like, and finally I used to get to the point where I'd be like finishing up the carpet with like a lint roller, like spot cleaning it, and the Dyson was like, done. Like it's so nice. But yeah, I guess moving back onto the questions I have, so we kind of already touched on this, but the AirTag's definitely outperforming Tile. There's no real comparison. Like if you wanted to keep your keys tracked and you had an iPhone, what do you buy?
In the stuff that like I've tested, so Tile doesn't have an answer to ultra wideband yet. The design, I would say, is better than the current Tile. I think the last generation Tile, they had like the Tile Style and Sport, and I think it was their last two that didn't have changeable batteries. When they moved to the changeable name, battery,
such a good name, Tile Style.
That was great. When they moved to, I think that's what they were called. When they moved to the, they don't sell them anymore, but when they moved to the ones with changeable batteries, there seemed like there was a drop in quality. Like they just didn't feel as solid. I don't see that with the AirTag. Like the AirTag feels like an Apple device. It's like what you would expect from Apple. Like I personally haven't tried the Find My Network. I'm hoping to mess around with that more over the next couple of weeks, but I expect that it will do well. And I know there's like videos of YouTubers hiding them in trees and then going on like a scavenger hunt to try to find it. And it seems to work really well, just anecdotally from what I've seen from other people. But as usual, like I got to put it through its paces myself at some point. But I would say that as long as you're an iPhone user, you're probably better off getting an AirTag than a Tile. And the one thing that we haven't talked about yet, I know we have to move on to the Galaxy Book, but the one thing we haven't talked about yet is that even if someone with an Android device finds it through NFC, like a phone number and a little message will appear on their phone. So like, say you lose your keys or something like that, right? And someone has a Galaxy S9, they put that near the AirTag, your phone number and a message like, give me back my keys, you horrible person, will appear. And then hopefully they'll contact you and give it back to you. So it's not entirely useless if an Android user discovers it, but like, obviously you shouldn't be buying an AirTag if you own an Android phone and you don't own an iPhone. It just doesn't make sense. You can't use it with it.
Well, I think you could log into like iCloud.com and like get that roundabout way to work.
Yeah,
it just would like be suboptimal for sure.
Yeah. You lose the key functionality.
Are you able to customize that number? Like I know on my phones, on my Android phones, you can put like a little message on the lock screen. I always put my work email address. Would I be able to put my email address as opposed to my phone number, or is it like locked to my phone number?
I believe you can put whatever you want.
Okay, cool. That's good.
Like you can change it to whatever you want to have show up, you can make that happen.
Cool. Just the last question I have is kind of a fun one. We already kind of touched on it a bit, but what are like the top things you could think of to AirTag? You know, like keys, obviously.
I want to AirTag my cat.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Like put it on her collar. I'm hoping someone comes out with some kind of like, because I don't want it to get caught on anything, like something small. I would actually consider doing that.
Like a little clip one or something.
Yeah, like a clip or something like that. I used to do it with a Tile, but they were always a little too big. And I think that the AirTag is like slightly smaller and a little thinner. So yeah, it might be a little easier for that. So that would be a fun one. I don't know, my bike, like putting it under the bike seat or something like that. I currently have the Tile sticker, which the name, I already forgot it, but I think it's called sticker, isn't it? Isn't that what I said?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I have that under the seat. So something like that with an AirTag, like I'll duct tape it under there. Like that, yeah. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. Any fun ideas, John?
No, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that I would want to AirTag, except for my car keys, maybe.
Yeah, so. I'm kind of in the same boat. Like the TV remotes you mentioned before, sunglasses, maybe keys, obviously. Like I think Alex and I will probably get some for our keys. Alex has a Tile, but I think the battery's dead on it, so time to switch, I guess.
They're pretty reasonably priced, too. That was the thing that shocked me. Like I thought Apple was going to charge $100 for them, and I think they're 35 Canadian.
Yeah, it's like 120 for four. It's not a bad price. You know, if you're like a couple or something, you each get two. It's like $50 a pop. It's not bad. Plus, I guess you got to buy cases or drill holes in them, but, you know, not bad. But yeah, I think that's it on AirTags. Unless anyone else has anything else, that's
kind of what I think. No, let's talk about the Galaxy Book Pro.
Yeah, I'm interested to learn more about this.
Yeah, I really enjoyed reading John's review because Windows devices
wasn't a full review.
It was a hands-on, sorry. Yeah. So are you doing a review eventually?
Maybe. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out with Samsung. They only sent me the Book Pro for like a week.
I'm familiar with
this. Just to do the hands-on. I don't even have it anymore. It's not here.
Yeah, so I've been a MacBook user for probably the last 10 years or so, but before that I only used Windows devices. And since then I've only really spent time with like Microsoft Surface line, Surface Pro 3, Surface Pro 4, very briefly, like loans from Microsoft or whatever. But I did spend time with Samsung's Galaxy Book Ion last year. And like, I thought that it was a really nice looking laptop on paper, like seeing it, writing the announcement post, stuff like that. But when I got it, it felt incredibly cheap. Like it had a ton of flex to it. I hated the keyboard. It was super powerful. Like it had, I think this one even had like a discrete graphics card, but it was also full of like tons of bloatware and stuff like that. I guess just like to start things off, just because this is something that I always care about with laptops, because I know right now we're all working from home and stuff like that, but usually you're moving them back and forth, right, from your house to work and whatever. What's the build quality like of the new Galaxy Book Pro? Like, does it stand up to a MacBook or like what I see as the, I guess, the gold star Windows device Surface product?
The build quality is good and bad. I didn't try the Book Ion like you did last year, but based on your subscription, I would say that Samsung's definitely improved the build quality. The only real issue I ran into with I got to try the Galaxy Book Pro, and there's also a Book Pro 360 that's like a two-in-one with the 360-degree hinge, and then just a regular Book Pro. So I tried the middle one. There's a Galaxy Book Pro, and Pro 360. I think I said Book Pro twice. I got to try the middle one, the Book Pro, which is just, you know, like your traditional clamshell laptop, and the build quality was pretty solid. The only issue I ran into was the trackpad was a little bit sticky, and I'm not entirely sure what the cause was that is. I suspect it had something to do with there being a little bit of flex on the keyboard and palm rest. And so I think the trackpad, like when you clicked it down, it could get caught on the edge and wouldn't unclick.
Oh, wow. Really? That bad?
That's awful.
It didn't happen all the time. Okay. And for the most part, I used the Galaxy Book Pro sitting at my desk, and I didn't notice that issue happening when I was working from my desk. I noticed it more like if I was sitting on the couch and I was using it on my lap that would happen, which is why I think that it had something to do with flex on the palm rest and the keyboard dock. But other than that, the build quality was pretty solid. I think most of the chassis was made out of some sort of plastic material, but it was pretty sturdy. And then the lid on the top of the screen was metal of some kind. I'm not sure what the material is exactly, but overall it looked pretty nice and it felt pretty good in my hands. There wasn't anything that stood out to me. There wasn't a lot of flex in the screen, just like a little bit with the keyboard. So
the bezels were really cool. Like when you took photos of it, that's something obviously as a MacBook user, Apple's laptops still have massive bezels, right? And it makes them look way older than they actually are. It looked like a futuristic laptop. Like, what was the display quality like?
Yeah, for sure. The bezels were really, really nice and small. Some of the smaller bezels I've seen on a laptop, I think some Lenovo laptops I've used recently had about the same size bezels, but a lot of laptops will have like a gap with the bezel where the bezel is like a little bit out from the screen. So there's like a difference in depth, which helps when you close it so that the screen isn't pressing up against the keyboard. Which I know is an issue you've had, Pat, with your MacBooks. So you didn't have that on the Galaxy Book, but I also didn't run into the screen issue very much, which was nice. Not that I had it for a huge amount of time to try that, but just in the short time that I had it, it was good. The actual display itself was disappointing. Samsung is kind of known for their great screens. So most of the Galaxy Book models have OLED screens, and they're all 1080p. For me, the 1080p resolution doesn't matter. Like at that screen size, there's not enough benefit in my opinion to having a higher res display. It's definitely not worth having a 4K at that size because it's just wasted pixels in my opinion. So it would have been nice to see a 1440p option from Samsung, but 1080p is fine. Despite the resolution though, like I did notice some really weird kind of blurriness to text and symbols. Like in Gmail, the archive symbols and stuff like that were all super blurry. Like it was like looking at it if you weren't wearing glasses or something like that. Huh. I don't know why it was like that. I messed around with a couple different settings, but I couldn't really get the resolution, or not resolution, but I couldn't really get it to look clear.
Maybe apps like that just load lower resolution assets on 1080p screens, expecting people to be using them on larger screens where they might not notice because everything would be a bit blurry.
It's definitely possible, but like comparing to other 1080p screens I have, everything still looks sharp on the 1080p screens, but it doesn't on Samsung. So I don't know what the root cause is. It could have been some weird, you know, aliasing thing or software thing going on. Yeah, that was kind of one of the more disappointing aspects of the laptop. It would have been nice to see a better, more high quality screen, especially knowing that Samsung can produce pretty stellar screens.
What about on the hardware side of things? Like, oh, did it come with like the latest mobile Intel chip? Like, what's the deal there?
Yeah, so you can get the 11th gen Intel chips. There are i3, i5, and i7 models with, I think, up to 32 gigs of RAM, depending on the configuration and the spec that you get. The Galaxy Book that I tried had an i3 and 8 gigs of RAM, and for the most part, it performed really well. I didn't push it through anything super difficult like Photoshop or anything like that, but I mostly just did web browsing. And it was fine, I don't know, 90% of the time. And then every once in a while, I would have a little bit of a bout of lag. So for most people, I would say, unless you're doing, or like, think about what you're going to use it for. The i3 will probably be fine for anybody who's just doing some light web browsing and word processing. If you want to do anything more than that, you're going to want the i5 at least. And, you know, realistically, it's not a cheap laptop. It's pretty expensive. So again, depending on what you want to do with it, like, it's worth considering the price. And to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to get a laptop and spend, you know, over $1,000 on it and only come away with an i3 processor, right? Like, if you're already spending that much, at least spend the extra to get, you know, a decent processor in it. Especially when, like, you can get, you know, i3 laptops for, you know, $500-$600 that will perform just as well.
Yeah, the last thing, and I guess you already answered it, like, with tech devices, we come from a place of privilege because companies send us stuff and we try all of these things. So with all that aside, like, is this the type of laptop you would recommend to, like, a friend or family? It's like, that's a question that I always like to come back to when I'm writing my reviews. And I think especially in this case, that's something that definitely applies.
Yeah, I would generally recommend it to friends and family. Again, my thing with laptops is it always comes down to what you're actually using the laptop for. And, you know, I think if you are looking for, you know, a really high-end laptop that's super lightweight and thin and easy to carry around, the Galaxy Book definitely hits all of those marks. And if you're willing to forgive a potentially mediocre display, like, that's really the biggest drawback I saw with it. So yeah, I think the Galaxy Book is definitely a good option for a lot of people if you're looking for that higher end experience. At the same time, there's plenty of budget options that will give you similar performance for less money. And on the higher end, like, you could get a Surface laptop for, which depending on the model you get, could be anywhere from $100 to $500 more. And you're going to get that better build quality. You're going to get some of those extra features like Windows Hello, where you facial recognition. The Galaxy Book just has fingerprint unlock, which is still really good, but it's not the face unlock on the Surface Pro. You're going to get a slightly better keyboard and stuff like that. So just, yeah, I would generally recommend it. The other thing I would say is I would probably recommend it to people who are a little bit more tech savvy because of all the bloatware. You know, I find that people who kind of know what they're doing with computers will find bloatware really annoying, but they'll know how to deal with it. Whereas people who aren't as computer savvy might get confused and wonder why they have three different calendar apps and one of them is Samsung and one of them is Microsoft, you know.
If you've used a Samsung phone, you're definitely familiar with that before if you've used a Samsung phone.
Yeah, it was very much a Samsung, a Galaxy experience when I was looking at the software. I was just like, why are there, you know, three different, you know, apps for connecting the laptop to my phone? Why is there a quick search app from Samsung that does the exact same thing as tapping the Windows key and typing in Windows 10, right?
Like, wait, so can you uninstall those apps?
I didn't test all of them, but there are definitely some you could probably remove. Windows, I think, is a little bit more lenient on that end compared to Android, where you can lock stuff to not be removed. So normally I take the time to go through and remove all the bloatware, but because I only had the laptop for a few days and I was trying to write my hands on, I didn't take the time to go through and remove the bloatware. I was going to say that it's not the worst bloatware experience I've ever seen on a laptop. I mean, from a numbers perspective, there's a ton of stuff, but there's definitely stuff in there that would be useful if you have a Galaxy phone or an Android smartphone. So there's, you know, kind of a mix there of some useful stuff and some not useful stuff, and most of the stuff is from Samsung, so it's, you know, a little bit more trustworthy. Recently I did the LG Gram, their 2021 version, And that one had a bunch of bloatware too. And some of it was just like really silly. Like there was some like DVD reading software on there and it doesn't even have a DVD player. And,
oh God.
You know, so definitely worse bloatware situations out there, but not a great situation overall.
The main question with any Samsung product is, what was the Fortnite skin like?
I don't think there was a Fortnite
skin. Exclusive Fortnite skins.
Wow.
I did not play Fortnite on it to try. I would not recommend it as a Fortnite playing device.
I know we have a bit of a hard out because you got to get to a briefing, right, John? So let's quickly move on to what we've been playing this week and move through it quickly so we can get to the outro.
I go first then? Because I'm the only one that's playing a game that people
do it. I know you wanted to talk about this a lot, so I'm sorry that we have to cut it short.
It's so good. So I played Half-Life Alyx and Loop Hero. Half-Life Alyx, if you have a VR headset, play it. That's all I'm going to say. Play it. Loop Hero, if you have any computer at all, also play it. It's like the most intense, like addictive game I've played in so long. Basically, there's a loop on your screen. It changes every loop every time you restart the game, essentially. And you place tiles on the loop or beside the loop. And they do different things. So you can place like a village tile on the loop and that will heal you when you go through it. But you could also place like a vampire mansion tile somewhere else, and that will like spawn a vampire that you have to fight, which is, you would think you don't want to do that, but you need to gain resources. You need to do fights. So you're always sort of structuring your loop for success of your player, who you're not also in control of. He just goes through the loop, or he or she, I'm not actually sure. It's kind of generalist almost, but they go through the loop and then they get equipment. You can add different weapons to them or different armor or like a ring to power them up or, you know, boots to boost their evasion or get like vampirism. So you get some lifesteal. So you're basically building a loop and equipping your character for success. And the whole key of the game really is just like, it's so, so, so tightly tuned. Everything is a risk and a reward. So like,
that's cool.
You can put the village down, but if you put two villages down, then a bandit camp appears beside that village. It becomes like a bandit village. Or you can put a village down and then put a vampire mansion beside it, and it turns into a ransacked village that will spawn ghouls for three loops. But after that, the village becomes the count's land and then heals you double what it did before. So that's like the risk reward for that one. Or like you can place mountain tiles, and mountains give you extra, they raise your max HP. But if you put them in a 3x3 grid, they're turned into like a towering mountain, which will give you like 200 HP boost. But it will also start to spawn harpies that will come down onto the loop and attack you. So you risk reward again. And everything is just so tightly tuned. It's hard. It's really hard to explain. But like the design of this game is impeccable. Like it is, there's nothing in there that seems overpowered or game breaking or I'll just do this and get there. It's like everything is just, you're walking on thin ice the whole time. Every decision carries the weight that could make or break the loop. And it is, yeah, you essentially just want to keep looping to build up your base, to get resources. You can save them for your base that will allow you to build more buildings there, to get new cards. So like the vampire mansion, the village, the farms, the rocks, those are all cards. And the more buildings you unlock in your base, the more cards you get to play. Although you can only have like a certain amount of cards in your deck. So there's also, you know, you got to like build it in that way. And it's like $17 on Steam. It runs on PC. It runs on Mac. I've been playing it on a 2016 MacBook Pro. I don't think there's a GPU in this one. It's like the base level one. So runs fine. I've been playing it through Steam Link on an iPad. Also runs fine. Like, it's just like, if you're looking for a game that's a little bit different, not a shooter, but you still want something that's like super, super engaging and you want to think, you want to have like a notepad down, writing notes and like figuring it all out. And it's so good. Everyone that I've got to play it so far is addicted.
That sounds sick.
Yeah. I don't know if you tried it, John, or not, because you're the only
one. I haven't tried it yet. No.
Yeah. So it's, I don't know. It's so, so good. Like if you're looking, I don't know if you guys played Hades last year.
I didn't, but I know a lot about it.
So Hades came out last year and it sort of tied the story of the roguelike into the game mechanic. Loop Hero also does that, but also, you know, Hades was just good because everything felt like it had a consequence. Everything felt very real and very like impactful. And Loop Hero just dials that up even more. It's not the same type of gameplay. It is like a roguelike in a sense, but it's just so finely tuned. It is, the developers are just brilliant. It's really smart. Probably my game of the year, maybe. It's nuts.
John, what have you been playing?
I've actually been playing Titanfall 2. Went back to that gem.
It's free, right? Free or something? A day ago or?
Basically, a couple things happened on Steam. It was available free for the weekend. So it wasn't like a free permanent download, but you could download it and play the multiplayer without buying the game for the course of the weekend. It's also on Steam, which is like huge. It's been restricted to EA's store for a long time. So it's come to Steam. It was available for free for the weekend. I think it's been on sale for a while and it's like $7 or something like that. So it's got a pretty significant player base right now. Like, it's not the biggest game on the market, but I think it's got a bigger player base now than when it launched, which is significant. And the game was always sick. It was such a good game. But when Titanfall 2 launched, it launched right in between Call of Duty and whatever the Battlefield game was that launched that year.
One or five, maybe?
Yeah. So anybody who was a fan of first-person shooters was playing Call of Duty or Battlefield or both. And not a lot of people had, you know, enough money or the desire to play Titanfall 2, because that's three full-price games that launched basically.
I skipped it for some reason. I don't remember why.
Yeah. So, and it was a great game at the time, and it still is a great game. So I've been playing that because of the higher player counts, which has also been driven by Apex. Apex is really popular, and the new season has some storyline stuff that connects back to Titanfall 2. So that's kind of been pushing players to try it out. And it was just some good old fun, smashing some people in Titans.
Good old fun.
Great time.
Apparently the story is really stellar too. Brad Shankar talks about it being one of the best first-person shooter stories that he's played, I think.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to go back really and play it. One.
It's great. If you're going to do it, now's the time. This weekend would have been the time. I don't think it's free anymore. But
I think I have it through EA Access or EA Play, whatever it's called. You do.
Yeah.
Or if you have an Xbox, it's often on sale for like $3 a dollar.
Yeah, all the time. I was just going to say that, yeah, near our old office. So I've just been playing Apex. I was off last week, so I played a ton, and I actually finished the Battle Pass for the first time in 8 seasons. Hyped for Season 9. And beyond that, I've also been playing new Pokemon Snap. I have a very nostalgic connection to that series. I think the thing that I'm struggling with it is that I'm just like, I don't feel like playing a Pokemon Snap game right now. So it's a little bit like I got to force myself to play it. But it's great. It's exactly like the N64 classic. You just take pictures of Pokemon and the professor rates them, and then you get points and you go to different courses.
It seems like a good game for parents to play with kids.
Yeah, it's a cool game. And as I was playing it, and this is the last thing I'll say because I know we're over time, is just I think that game is what got me interested in photography as a kid. Mm. And it taught me like a lot of the fundamentals, like the rule of thirds, keeping the subject framed properly, like very basic things. And I didn't realize that until I started playing new Pokemon Snap. So that's been an interesting experience rediscovering that. But yeah, let's wrap it up. That's it. Thanks for listening to the Syrupcast. You can find me on Twitter at @Patrick_Rourke. And of course on mobilesyrup.com. The only big thing that I've done recently is the AirTag story. I have a bunch of Apple stuff probably hitting the site at some point this month, but I don't have a specific date for that quite yet. Bennett, where can people find you?
You can find me in Loop Hero, just going around the loop, and on Twitter at @TheBradFad, Instagram @TheBradFad, and on mobilesyrup.com. And I put up a cool opinion piece. I just had to get it out. I'm just like how much car infotainment and in-car software just makes me angry. I'm trying not to swear about it, but I just get real angry because it's so bad. But yeah, so that's up there, and hope you guys feel the same way.
And John, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @John_Lamont. That's at @JON_LAMONT, and of course on the website mobilesyrup.com. Biggest thing I've written recently would be the Galaxy Book Pro hands-on, so definitely check that out if you want to learn more about the laptop based on what we said today. And yeah, that's basically it.
And as always, you can find all of our content on mobilesyrup.com, and also follow us on Twitter and Instagram @@mobilesyrup. Thanks for listening and watching.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.